Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I am unashamed. What about you?
Well, welcome to the Unashamed podcast, Adam Carolla.
Yep.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
I might have to confess something right here. I didn't know who you were because I don't get out much, but I did a Google search of you, and it was basically about every year something you said that offended some people. That was your whole Wikipedia experience. So I'm going to like this guy.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that, probably for good reason.
Probably shouldn't.
Now it's like if you... ever have your colonoscopy and they want to show you what's going on down there, I just say, do your job. You know what I mean?
Do we really need to look and see what all's happening in there? I mean, I don't.
No, I don't. I don't need to go there. I don't need to tour the Hormel factory and see how the sausage is made. I don't need any of that stuff. I just want to eat.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Well, one of the things, Adam, I do know who you are because I'm a little more cultured than my younger brother. But I saw some of your old stuff and watched some of your comedy stuff. But I've really kind of enjoyed when you were with O'Reilly and now it's Tucker and all these, you know, different people, kind of having that crossover humor to, what would you call yourself, a conservative commentator or whatever, you know. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, there's not a lot of comedy on the right side or the conservative side of the aisle. And it's also, I've never really changed. I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but I'm guessing you have. I didn't become a born-again Christian. I didn't become a conservative. I didn't become anything. What I've been saying into a microphone hasn't changed for 25 years. It's just the world around me changed. So I always was for, you know, back in the day, it's like, well, you want a good police force, and you want school choice, and you want religious freedom, and you want a strong border and a strong military, and lower taxes and less regulation and smaller government. And this is all just basic stuff.
Makes sense to me.
I've always thought about.
We'll vote for you.
But now, and by the way, it was never conservative. I was never called a conservative. I was just a guy who was like, I was fine. I was fine with gay marriage, and I was also fine with lowering taxes. Like I've always thought the same way about everything. It's just lately, the way the left is fashioned, you have to agree with them on every subject, and it doesn't matter how outlandish the subject is. If biological men can run track against biological women in high school, you have to be down with that cause. If you're not, if you don't think it's fair to the women, then you're conservative.
But, you know, the old way is pretty much rock solid for people like us.
Well, I think his point, too, is now in your world, if you try to be, I can't imagine trying to be a comedian, because now people are so sensitive about every one of these issues. It's like our little duck show that we had. We had a lot of people watching it from all spectrums of life because it was funny. But then somebody said, well, wait a minute, these guys, do you know what they actually believe? Because it was never, you know, on the show. It was just a funny, it was something you could laugh at. But once they kind of tied some of our beliefs, some of the things you listed as well, well, that wound that up. It was no longer funny. It was offensive.
Right.
How dare you? What do you? So I was just, my question would be, how are you trying to be funny in this sensitive world now?
Well, you know, I have a kind of a vetting process, which is, do I think it's funny? Does it make me laugh? Do I think there's some truth to what I'm saying, and then I say it. So I don't really put it through a filter. I don't have a governor. I don't vet it. I just say it. So, and then my feeling is whoever's listening can laugh, or they can be offended, or most likely and more likely they can pretend to be offended, because they're not really offended. I mean, nobody really cares about all this stuff. Their job is to pretend to be offended, or more so pretend to be offended on behalf of other groups that they're not in.
Yeah.
So the the middle-aged white chick is going to be offended on behalf of black men or Jewish men or whatever that is. And I don't really think they're offended. I don't really think they care. I'm pretty sure they don't. I'm a comedian. I'm supposed to say what I feel. And the second you start as a comedian sort of second guessing yourself or trying to wonder, is that going to offend somebody, or what's the reaction going to be? Then you're kind of done being a comedian.
Yeah.
I think all the comedians that we've appreciated over the years, all the greats, all your, Pryors or your George Carlins or guys like that, they said what they wanted to say.
Yeah.
And I think we appreciate that. So for me, considering there's a kind of rich history of comedians saying what they want to say, I mean, Lenny Bruce or whomever, then why should I deviate from that?
Are there areas you stay away from now in terms of stand-up, or are there places you – I don't know. I recently heard Seinfeld say he wouldn't do college campuses anymore because it just, it just wouldn't work for him because, they're so sensitive about everything. Are you like that as well, or is you pretty much just – because I don't know how much stand-up you're doing, but I know you still do some.
Yeah, wherever they ask me to go, I go and I do my routine and I improvise and do some crowd work. But no, I don't have places I won't go, and I don't have things I won't say. I'll go on any show, I'll play any venue, but I'm gonna say what I'm thinking.
I
heard the other day when Dan Rather was interviewing Rickles. I remember Don Rickles.
Don Rickles, I loved him.
He asked him how he could have gotten away with all that back in the day. And basically Rickles said, freedom of speech is a beautiful thing.
Right.
He said, I was joking. I'd make fun of this one, that one, other. You get on Johnny Carson.
Oh, he's the king of the insults.
Oh, the king of the insult. He said, I didn't have any kind of deep, rooted animosity. I was just kidding. He said, but it's got to where now. He said, I'm still doing it. He said, but there's not as many people laughing about it anymore.
Right.
At the same jokes. He's just kidding. And he didn't care whether you're black, white, whatever. If he just wanted to make a joke, he'd do it,
Right.
But people can't laugh at themselves.
You know what? I miss Rickles.
Oh, yeah. I missed that whole era. I mean,
I used to laugh till I cried watching him.
So Adam, Dad, and I, this is 30 years ago. I just got married, and we lived next door to each other because we kind of compound live down here in Louisiana. And we would sit up, we would watch Carson and Letterman almost every night because we were, just starting our company. And I mean, it was pretty much, I mean, they made political jokes. Carson was great at it, but it was sort of apolitical. It wasn't any side. It never felt like there was a side. And then that's when we saw these young comedians, Seinfeld and all these people, and Rickles, some of the older guys, Leno. And I mean, it was funny. Like, we laughed every night.
It was a better world to live in.
It was. And Letterman right after, and Letterman was, but then now today, it just seems like
what
so
I think?
Cranky.
I think, without us grasping the weight of it, Carolla, I think we're freedom of speech is hanging in the balance here. I think we're seeing the collapse of literally the freedom to speak.
Yeah.
Whether it be a joke or not, or you're serious. So what? What's your idea on anything? I'm a God-fearing man. Someone says, well, that's dumb. And I'm like, well, to you, the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But to us who believe, it's being saved by the power of God. So we're saying we're all in with Jesus. A lot of people say, well, I'll tell you what, that bunch of redneck idiots. It's just what I believe. And I would think we'd all be better off if we each had the right to believe whatever.
Well, at least and talk about it.
I'm going with Jesus. Says, well, I'm not. I'm saying, well, whatever. But it's not like I hate him because of it. I love him. I'm like, he's a fellow human being. I don't know how that's hard.
I like the diversity. I mean, you know, one of my closest friends is conservative talk show host Dennis Prager.
Yeah, I met him.
He's a devout Jew.
Yep.
We have a great time together. I'm an atheist. He's a Jew. He's a deeply religious Jew. It doesn't come up. I like the diversity of it. I like talking to him about his religion and, you know, and then you hear about some of the stuff, like, you know, you hear about the Sabbath every Friday, you know, that's the Sabbath meal, gets together with family and friends. And I go, well, that's smart. And that makes sense. I mean, religious or not, because my TV, you know, my family, we all just grab a plate and head to a separate room and watch TV shows, you know. Yeah. It'd be nice if we had a Sabbath.
A time together.
So, but it's interesting to me. And it's diverse. And I don't know why we don't appreciate that. I mean, that's kind of what the United States was built on. All the different people with all their different beliefs, expressing themselves and kind of living amongst each other. And, you know, you think that Dennis wouldn't like the fact that I'm an atheist, but he doesn't care.
Right.
He cares that I'm a good person. He cares that I have character, you know, and we have much more in common because, and he, you know, he grew up on the East Coast. He studied symphonies. He traveled to Russia. He speaks five languages. I do none of that. I've come from none of that. I grew up in North Hollywood, California. There was with no religion and no culture and no anything. But we have common sense, and we have that in common. And that's the bond. I think you're going to find that you're most attracted to people with common sense. That's the biggest. That's the greatest bridge that you can build is just being around people with common sense.
Yep.
We start breaking it off into skin color and religion and you know, sexual proclivities. Why is that the number one thing we need? You know, someone's gay, he's gay, I'm gay, he's straight. What's that have to do with anything?
So we've been talking about big tech censorship over the last several weeks and just the threat that we have, you know, to what's going on here. First and foremost, we believe that God's in control and ultimately information is not going to be throttled, but it does ebb and flow. And so that's one of the reasons why we are working with Blaze TV behind a paywall, where no matter what happens, you can get access to our stuff. You go to blazetv.com/Phil. And right now they got a special. Al, what's the special?
It's $69. Normally it's $99, so it's $30 off. So and this is per year, so it's not a lot of money. You're talking about, you know, per month. It's really small if you know, view it in that way. So, and not only do you get access, you know, to this and other things and what Dad's doing, but you get, you know, Mark Levin and Glenn Beck and everybody that's on our network. So it really is a good deal. A lot of good people that are on there. And, you know, I mean, I love it. I love going to watch different things that are there.
Yeah, and at this point in time, this is more than a promotion for us. I mean, we really highly encourage you to go and subscribe to what we're doing at Blaze TV. And again, it's $30 off, only $69. That's blazetv.com/Phil, and you'll get the code. You'll see the little box on the landing page there.
Did you tell us about that? So y'all did a documentary together, No Safe Spaces, in back in 19. What was that about? Because I haven't seen it, but I did see that was one of the things you guys did.
Yeah, you guys would enjoy that. It was about free speech. It was about, you know, what's going on college campuses. And it was a kind of foreshadowing of where we're at now. You know, we sort of felt this thing was coming some years ago. And we set out and did the doc on that subject. And since the doc, which is only a year or two old, since we, you know, we started it probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
But since it's complete, it's been ratcheted up. I mean, it's gotten quite a bit worse over the last couple of years than even, and we were doing the doc because we thought it was bad then.
Right. And now look, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, you guys are very prophetic, you know, with the whole idea. And I saw that Shapiro and some of those guys were on there as well. So I'm gonna have to check that out. Adam, tell us about your latest book, and I'm gonna read the title for our audience. It's "I'm Your Emotional Support Animal: Navigating Our All Woke No Joke Culture."
Now, what was the woke again? What was
navigating our all woke no joke culture?
But y'all.
Oh yes, explain to Jace Adam, because again he doesn't get out much. What it means? What does woke mean? Because he doesn't know.
Well, Jace, I don't know if you don't get out much or you don't get in much. I feel like you're out. I feel like you being out all the time is probably why you don't know anything. I think you got to come in and watch a little news.
I'm out on a lot of things that goes on.
Well, you knew what woke was, though. I was shocked.
Well,
okay.
I've just heard it through the grapevine. I'm like, woke is a joke without any hope. It didn't offer you any hope. So I'm like, I don't believe I'll get into that.
But I can't remember what it was.
It's just my way of addressing what's going on, how people have lost the ability. The stuff we've discussed, you know.
Okay.
Can't make jokes about people, can't make jokes about culture, can't make jokes about anything anymore. And this book just steamrolls right through that. It's no holds barred. You know, I had the editor in New York, younger person, you know, kept writing back, you sure you want to say this or you can't say this? And I would say, oh, well, if you say I can't say it now, it's definitely in this book. I pulled nothing out. This poor guy, he didn't realize that every time he said to me, you can't say that or you shouldn't say that or you're going to really offend people if you leave that in the book, he just cemented his fate. I'm now, by virtue of him saying that, it has to stay in the book because that was why I wrote the book.
I love it. Have you gotten good feedback from folks that have read it?
Yeah, I think it's last I checked on Amazon had about 2,500 reviews and 4.6 or 7 stars. That's so good. It's a very well reviewed book. Obviously, it's hated by certain people. But by folks like us who feel like a lot of comedians have just sort of shut up or changed their politics or become essentially Moranos, which is an interesting term, which is something that Prager brought up to me a time or two, which is Moranos were a group of Jews that just pretended they weren't Jewish so they wouldn't get into trouble. I don't know if it was in Spain and, you know, 18 something, but the point is we got a lot of Moranos out there. There's a lot of comedians that are pretending, not talking. No one wants to be deplatformed. No one wants to be removed. Mm. You know, guys like you built your own business. You can't be deplatformed. You can say what you want.
Right.
I'm in the same boat, but most people aren't that way.
Right.
Just every day you turn on the news, you find someone else who got canned from their job for expressing themselves. And those people are scared.
So one of the things that I've noticed that is needed now with this current Zoom era that we've been in for the last year. I mean, have you done a lot of Zooms? Yeah, it's a lot of like speaking and
hundreds.
Yeah, Dad does a lot of media this past year, and one of the things that you know you really need is to be able to hear. It's the biggest issue for me, and so I find myself using earbuds quite a bit. You know, during these, do you use the earbuds or you just go with the computer?
I've used both, but I think the more important thing is like that commercial when they say, you know, treat it like a mirror. You know, is that how you look into a mirror?
Right. You don't look like us. So we have a new sponsor for our podcast called Raycon, and they make earbuds. And, of course, they're Bluetooth. They're sweat resistant. They've got a lot of good qualities to them. So, you know, as like me, you're probably doing a lot of Zoom, and you might want to check these guys out. Basically, Raycon is offering 15% off all their products for our listeners. And so you go to buyraycon.com. Raycon is R-A-Y-C-O-N. buyraycon.com/unashamed. You get 15% off your order and check out some earbuds.
I think with us, you know, our family, we've made fun of each other in a loving way, I guess, but not really, practically, our whole lives, because we didn't really take ourselves too seriously. And so then when they started filming us, you know, they'd have little jokes or ideas, but that they never made it. It was always just naturally we got into
what we
it.
Would like, do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Willie and I have been making fun of each other our entire life.
Right.
It's just graphically as possible. And then laughing. But, you know, if somebody else, I guess, you know, tries to do some serious harm, you know, I'd be the first person to take it up for it. Right. But I think it's just because laughter is, you know, and not taking yourself too seriously, because we all have our baggage and mistakes. It's just, it warms the soul. And I look around and all this fear and about the pandemic, and look, there's a lot of tough times and people have died, but you know, you need, if you could just laugh for a few minutes every day, it's amazing, I think, what would happen.
But the woke crowd, if you look at them carefully, they have not thought it worthwhile to ever entertain the concept that, okay, we've caught this guy in a mistake. He owned slaves 216 years ago. Because of that, we will never, from this day, for the next 1,000 years, we will not forgive him for making that mistake of having slaves when that's not right. Well, if you're going to hold it against someone, anything they made a mistake in.
Yeah, because all those guys are dead.
You're in a mistake-filled world, and there's a large group of them, Al. Now, they have their mistakes, but that doesn't count. They're only looking at yours, and they're saying to you,
"Well, from 200 years ago,
it's the cancel culture. It's the foundation of wokeism. Oh, yeah. They don't have the ability, or the desire, or the wherewithal to say, you know what? I don't hold that against you. Whatever. It's been a long time. You know, if you hold something against someone for 200 years, a mistake he made, and you tear down what renown he ever had, I'm just looking at that corona saying that's a tough way to operate on planet Earth, interacting with each other.
Somewhere, I don't know if it's old or new, probably Old Testament, they say he was a good man in his time. So they meant judging by the times they were in, because obviously things change, and something like slavery used to be the norm.
Yep.
And using different terms for different people and different ethnicities or women, you know, this was all stuff that was in its time the norm.
Yep.
And you can't go ahead 500 years and then judge the person because he acted in a way that was a norm in the time.
That's correct.
And it's like, it doesn't mean you condone any of it. It just was in his time.
Yeah.
Because look, let's be honest. At some point, if they put a statue of me up in front of North Hollywood High, because I'm one of the greatest graduates of North Hollywood High, they're going to have to, they'd tear it down 100 years from now because they'd find out I was a meat eater.
Yeah. That is my point, Corolla. I mean, how do you survive? Because how does anyone survive if there's never any forgiveness?
Right.
Because I'm not going to hold it against you, dude.
We would actually be worse because we hunted down the meat, killed it, and then ate it.
Yeah. Oh, no. You guys, yeah, they're not going to put the statue up. There's going to be one up to take down. They might put your statue up at 10 a.m. and by noon, they'd be coming for it.
That is correct.
Same day statue removal.
Well, tell us about that, Carl. I mean, you're living, you know, we're down here in Louisiana, and but you're living in the state of states. I mean, like, all these people are leaving. Tell us what it's like in California. I mean, you're obviously native. You've been out there, I guess, most of your life. But what's it like to be in a
what happened?
Lockdown?
What I mean, happened? At one time they voted for Ronald Reagan, for crying out loud.
Ronald Reagan.
What happened, Corolla?
You know, it's always been, well, it's always, and not always been, but in recent history, it's just a Democratic supermajority out here. And I think everyone thinks of themselves as, you know, this is California. We have to be progressive. We're going to lead the world. Every kooky idea we announce, we have to do it first here in California. And of course, when you have the kind of single party majority that we've had out here and it's all Democrat, then of course the state's going to start falling apart because their ideas are horrible. They're big into taxing. They're big into regulation. And businesses start moving out. And regular folks who just want to live their life and be left alone, they go to Texas, you know, they go to Florida, they go to Louisiana, they get out.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing now is an exodus of taxpayers. Like the people, Elon Musk, the people that create jobs, it's such an unfriendly environment to create jobs that they'd rather just go to Texas and create jobs. Yeah. I mean, we used to, you know, Tesla. You guys know what a Tesla is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do know.
I actually own that stock. It's been really good.
Tesla is the last car company to move out of California. We used to have Nissan. We used to have Toyota. GM was here. We had a lot of car. We did a lot of car building here. They all left. And Tesla was the last.
Yep.
So if you just took a look at automotive, you know, that the industry, those guys, automotive is a pretty bottom line industry. You have to deal with unions. You have to deal with suppliers. You have to deal with regulations. You know, think about the regulations in building a car. Well, California overregulates everything. And so obviously it's not attractive. So these companies, they pick up and they move to Texas or they move to Nashville. Yep. I think Tennessee. I think Nissan moved to Tennessee.
They did.
I remember Toyota moved to one of the Carolinas maybe, but they just get up and leave because they need to make money. And then when they leave, they take the tax base with them and the unions get bigger and the companies get smaller because they leave, and that's it. Now we have this, and then you start sprinkling in homelessness and you know, the lack of we're not into law and order. We're not into rule of law. We're more worried about homeless people and their rights than we are about taxpayers and their rights. And I, in this book, in one of my books, I think in maybe my first book, In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks, I laid it out. I said, there's a long street that goes by the Forest Lawn Cemetery. It's right here in the middle of the valley. And it's a long street. And on one side of the street, there are people who are here illegally from Mexico selling flowers, all, you know, no taxes paid, you know, all cash.
Yep.
Undercutting the businesses, the florists that are paying their rent, paying the employees, paying taxes. On one side of the street, there's a whole bunch of folks who are here illegally and they're selling flowers that they bought down at the, you know, Flower Mart in downtown LA, and then they brought them and they're selling them for $10. You know, obviously the florists, the legitimate businesses can't compete with them because they have no overhead, they have no insurance, they have no anything. That's on one side of the street. On the other side of the street is a motorcycle cop, and he's backed up the driveway and he has his radar gun out. And the reason he's backed up there is because it's a long, straight, windy street and people tend to speed on that street. So if you want to know what's going on in LA, you have the cop with the radar gun giving out tickets to taxpayers, soccer moms, and people trying to get to work. On the other side of the street, you have illegals selling, running a business with no permits, no tax, no nothing, undercutting other businesses, and they're completely left alone. They can do whatever they want. They're empty bags. We're not interested. The cops are interested and the taxpayers because they have checking accounts,
yeah,
and they want to get money from them.
That's right.
And if you want to know what's going on in L.A. and in California, that's it. Just look at that street.
That's right.
That's all you need to know.
Has any of the people who are the champions of this wokeness and the cancel culture crowd, do any of them ever get together, Carolla, and say, we may be hurting ourselves with this kind of logic?
No, they have no ability to look in the mirror. They don't have a sense of irony. The same idiots in this town that never stop crowing about McCarthyism. They never stop talking about people being blacklisted and, you know, writers in the 50s, right, 40s, you know, being communist sympathizers. So they were unable to get work and they were deplatformed, essentially. I mean, their livelihood was taken away from them. The same idiots that never shut up about that are frantically trying to get everyone else fired from their job right now who disagrees with them.
That's right.
And they do not sense the irony in that at all.
They're just in a bubble. I mean, this is what it is. And you wonder this at some point, the bubble has to burst though. What you just described, Adam, you can't run a state like that or country either. I mean, at some point it's just going to get upside down and it's going to crash and burn, I guess. I mean, it has to be what's
Why coming. Is it this infatuation that human beings have had since he showed up? What was it? 1600 and whatever. Or was it 1800? I don't know, but it's before.
Coming in America?
Yeah.
Why does
Karl Marx keep raising his head, and you look at his policies and the damages that have occurred in lieu of them, you would say, you know, we might ought to get off this Karl Marx train. But he keeps coming up, Carolla, and I'm looking at it. I tried to research to find out what job workplace Karl Marx ever had, and I come up, he's like Bernie Sanders. I came up with nothing that he ever did as far as work.
Yeah, you know, I always describe it as this way. So I'm a car guy, and Jay Leno's shop is up the street from me, a couple miles, and I hang out there a bit. And he has a turbine car, a Chrysler turbine car, kind of experimental. They built a handful of them in the 60s. And they thought, you know, it looks like a rocket ship. You know, they thought it was the future. These turbine cars will be the future. And so what I'm saying is the turbine car never worked. It just didn't. It just didn't work. It seemed like a good idea. It seemed like the future, but it turns out the internal combustion engine, you know, going back to the Model T and now in the car I just drove here today, that's the same engine, pistons, connecting rods, you know, valves, heads, cams, yep. Same. It's the technology is 110 years old, but it works the best. And so the analogy is capitalism and free markets and whatever America used to be, that's the internal combustion engine. This turbine engine, it seems like the future, but it doesn't work. And you hear a lot of people now, a lot of AOCs and politicians of her ilk, what they're saying is, okay, the turbine engine car never worked. It never worked. Fine. I have a new idea for a turbine engine car. And what we're saying is what's wrong with the internal combustion engine?
It works
fine. And they're saying, well, that's your grandpa's car. This is the new car.
Yeah.
This is the future.
Yep.
So we understand that the turbine engine, it didn't work in Cuba and it didn't work in Russia and it didn't work in Venezuela and it never worked anywhere ever. But ours is different. We got our own take on the turbine car. So just listen to us. But just give us money and then we'll do it. We'll take care of it. And I'm looking at the internal combustion car and the turbine car and I'm going, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it ever worked.
Yep.
I think there's problems with it that are fair inherent point. With the car.
The sage wisdom of Adam Carolla. Well, I know we got to go. You got to run and so do we. But man, we appreciate you coming. I definitely encourage our audience to check out your book and your projects you have going on. And so I'm glad you came to Unashamed. Adam.
I'm glad you guys have me. Anytime you like, I'll come back.
All right. Keep fighting the fight, brother.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Enjoyed it.
So that was interesting. That's probably the most different guest we've ever had on Unashamed, Corolla.
Yeah. I mean, basically what I realized, I could be wrong about this, is that the redneck world and the Christian community, we're basically the last people that you can make fun of, and it's okay.
Right.
So if I was a comedian, I would say, yeah, I'll be on those guys. And we're okay with it, you know, because I think we need to laugh. I mean, I didn't know what he believed. He kind of threw me under the bus. Maybe I do need to get more in touch with society.
He said, your problem is not that you don't get out much. You don't get in much. He said, you're just out there, Jace. You're out there just missing out what's happening. That was pretty funny.
And when he was talking, I don't know if we were recording when we were, he was talking about having the colonoscopy. that was one of the darkest times of my life when I had that. And so when he used that as an illustration, which I guess, have we all been there before?
I don't think that. You've ever had a colonoscopy?
Not that I know of.
Don't do it. I mean, it's one of the few things that after 2 days of that, I woke up mumbling to myself, you know, inviting people to a fish fry. That happened. I thought, I'd just rather be dead. I mean,
when you woke up,
I know they tell people go check it and they'll find cancer. And I mean, I get it. I get what we're doing. That was horrible. Maybe they've made some kind of.
No, it's still bad.
Maybe years ago, somebody said that you ought to at least do that once in your life.
Yeah.
And I think they did it. And I said, my conclusion was after it was over, I said, the only bowel troubles I ever had was someone checking to see whether I had bowel
yeah,
troubles.
Yeah, that's right. That's what my point is. It's horrible.
I mean, just to look and find out if you have bowel troubles, that was bowel troubles.
Because they put you bad. Under.
I mean, they gave you a pill and just, and I mean, everything that you, out of your bowels, lower bowel, it all came up. And I'm thinking, this is the only trouble I've had.
Yeah.
They said, that's what we're looking for, whether you have trouble or not.
Well, I was going to ask you, because it was an interesting conversation, and I was going to ask him, you know, what did he recommend? I mean, we ran out of time. I didn't know we were on a time schedule, but what
he's a busy man, Jez. He's a celebrity.
Yeah.
We're just down there on the river.
I'm glad he came on, because I just feel like our culture needs to laugh some and to relax. And I just feel like we need that. You know, I didn't tell him, but I was in Austin this past week, and it's just culturally, it's just so different when I come home.
Right.
You know, Missy wanted to go to the movies. They have like a dine-in movie where, and the food was incredible. And this place was huge, and it was swanky. I mean, the chairs, you know, you're laying back and you have the waiter come up and are you good? And there's no handing tickets. You know, you just booked your seats. Well, here's why I'm telling you this. There was no one there. It was my wife, me, and my daughter in the entire facility. Zero people at the movie. I thought it was awesome. This was like our private.
But how could they have good food with only three or four sitting there?
They went and cooked it, I guess. It was outstanding.
So it was like a meal at the movie? You're not talking about popcorn or hot dogs.
Oh, no. Oh, you get popcorn, and it was better than your average popcorn. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you know, $72 a bucket, which was amazing. I think we ate a meal for three with an appetizer and popcorn. It was like 60 bucks. I mean, it was really good food.
And no one else appreciated this place but you.
There's nobody there because this place leans left and blue, and because of the coronavirus, there was nobody there.
Right.
So I asked the waiter, I was like, "Well, what happens if we didn't show up tonight?"
He said, it would have just been another night. So I tipped him the amount of our meal because I thought,
This is
all you're getting tonight, right here. I told Missy, I was like, let me have the check. Because, you know? I mean, this is it. But what I was going to say is, we watched this movie. Forrest Gump. He was the Forrest Gump character.
Oh, you're talking about when he was Tom Hanks, when he was the Western?
Yeah.
I've seen News of the World.
Did you like it?
You know, I did. There's a little bit of the... A couple of things I felt like they would, you know.
This is why I'm bringing this up, though, Al. I liked the movie, and even though it was really slow, yeah. It kind of reminded me the flow of like the
Unforgiven. Here's what I didn't like about it. When you watch the trailer, it was like all action. But then when you watch the movie, the whole trailer is like 5 minutes of the movie.
Oh, it's like my daughter, she's a hot. I was shaking her. And like, it's going to get better, but you know, I like the type of movie. But here's what I was going to say. I mean, this guy... he's probably as far left as you can get, the star in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the people that wrote it, because the backdrop of the movie.
No doubt about it.
Look, the backdrop of the movie was this. You know, we came over here and took the Indians' land. So they had that little storyline going.
Yeah.
It was the Civil War was going on. They had this going on. This little girl was a German immigrant or whatever. And they just, you know, kill all her family and just was trying to kill her and abuse her. So it's like all these different types of groups of people, which is what, you know, we were discussing with Corolla, and it's just a mess. Violence and just horrible. So that's the backdrop of it. And I get it why they wrote it, because they're...
Well, the hero is the journalist. He's a journalist, you know.
Well, and look, he's just giving the news. He goes around and he gives the news.
Yep.
Look, and they were representing that he was speaking the truth.
Right.
And they had these little clans of mainly groups of white guys who were controlling the cities.
That's right.
And so it was all there. Now you say, well, how come you like that? Because to me, I look at everything, including our conversation that we just had, through the lens of I believe there's a God. And I believe he made all people, and I believe all people make mistakes. So in my eyes, I'm like, yep, there's been a lot of mistakes in this country. And you made reference to that. And look, there's been...
Everybody makes mistakes.
And the whole point of this movie was, and if I'm ruining the movie for you, great, because look, by the time you get to the end, you will have forgotten everything I've said. This movie has five O's in the word slow. It is... So slow. I mean, you can take a nap at various sections and get up and say, oh, no, we're still here. But they basically, he realized that I have to help this person. And I think it was some underground immigration issue about, because they were from Germany. And he's like, you know, and I lost my wife, you know, and he had tragedy. And it wasn't really because of any kind of culture or whatever. His wife died. And so he just makes a decision. I've got to help this girl.
It's biblical.
Yeah. So you say, well, how did you get something out of it? Because I thought about God and us, despite our mistakes, despite our baggage, he pursues us. He loves us. He sent us Jesus. Mm-hmm. And to others, that is foolishness. But to us who are being saved, it's like the power of God. And that bringing people together under that umbrella is something that we do. And the news that he shared to bring people together, well, we share good news. We're reading the book of Acts. They go around and they share this image of God, of Jesus, from town to town. To me, it was a mirror image of what we do, except we just do it in the name of Jesus in love.
Yep.
It was so similar to me.
I saw that.
Without Jesus.
I saw it in the movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I got some of those good things out of it, but the other part kind of just irks me. I hate it when people, they write in, they go back in time. It's sort of what Corolla was talking about. And then they write in their current issues back into a time when they wouldn't even been dealing with the, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like you try to take back this kind of mindset now back to a Westerner. I don't know. It just irritates me.
Loving God and loving your neighbor would have fit perfectly with that current movie.
Well, right. I'm going to tell you this.
Been the motivation for the whole
thing. It was. There were some good things. Jesus, it's well-acted.
Jesus hung out with the riffraff. He hung out with the tax collectors, probably atheists and ever, you know, people, you know, because a lot of people in the religious world, we get so cultish. We have this sectarian mindset because people are probably surprised. They're like, well, why would you have an atheist on your show? Because y'all all believe in Jesus.
Right.
You're like,
because we don't want to have the same group thing that we were describing on the other side.
It doesn't make me uncomfortable at all. No. I love everybody.
We'll listen to what they have to say.
Exactly. Right. And I think that's what's wrong with our culture. We just have sects, and the religious world has their sect.
Yep.
And everything results in alienation, which we talked about on previous podcasts.
Division.
So, but here was the interesting point. So the reason Corolla was on our podcast is because they reached out. They want you to be a guest on his podcast. So look, everybody knows you're one of the most recognized men of faith in America, in our culture. And hey, Adam Carolla, who's an atheist, wants to have you on his podcast, which then opened the door for us to have him on ours.
Yep.
I really do think it's an idea that you can learn a lot from people. He used the word common sense as the connector. And he's right in the sense that the stuff he was describing in terms of how we live, I mean, he's not going to go at, we're going to go at it from a spiritual biblical angle.
Right.
But he's going to go at it just from a common sense angle. And yet at the same time, we find a lot of common ground in what he believes.
Exactly. That's what I was going to bring up. You know, I was wondering what his approach was going to be, but I was going to bring up not only common sense, but conversation. A lot of people, they won't even, once they label you in our culture, that the conversation ended.
That's it.
Which is why I brought up about our show.
Right.
You say, well, the ratings got up to whatever it was, 12, 14 million people. And then a certain group of people, when they discovered that we actually believe in Jesus, that he's real, well, it was no longer funny. No matter what you did, you could have the greatest
that's right
humor set of all time. They're like, people believe in Jesus.
Not
how
funny.
How dare they? That's not funny. Because it doesn't really fit the narrative of what they believe, like that movie, on how you're gonna reshape the world. We're gonna do it one kid at a time, which is kind of was the theme of the movie, in love. But we can agree on love. I mean, at the end of the movie, I'm like, I'm hoping he helps this girl.
Yeah.
Out of love, even though you just believe in the news, just go around and just tell everybody the truth about what happened.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, that's what I'm doing. I believe this happened.
But you're right as a mindset, because I remember one of our mutual friends, Carbo, Willie and I were telling about Dumb and Dumber. He said, oh, that's will be so stupid. So have you ever watched it? He said, no. It's this hilarious movie. It's dumb, but I mean, it's funny. So he decided, he was like, we all watched it together. He never chuckled. He never, because he had made his mind, and we're falling out on the floor laughing at some of the hijinks. But when you make up your mind, that's not going to be funny, then your mind is made up. I mean, it's just that's when people get so ironclad. And I think you see that across the spectrum.
I mean, look, to tell you the truth, I have a lot more respect for somebody who doesn't believe in God and then tells what he believes on social issues. I'm like, well, of course this is what you think. Because in my mind, you know, I think about that verse in Corinthians that says, don't be shocked, you know, when you associate with the world and what they believe. And he was talking about in the context of sex or whatever. But the more shocking part is if someone claims to be a follower of Jesus, claim to have surrendered, and then their lifestyle is in direct opposition of what he says. Which is worse?
Yeah. It's a good point.
I mean, I think that was Paul's point in
it was.
To the Church of Corinth.
Yeah, it was interesting. Corolla, he's, you know, I mean, I've been, like I said, I picked him up more on the now that he's kind of more of a conservative voice and more humor. But he's kind of like Dennis Miller. All those guys are like that. They're not really socially conservative, but they're, you know, politically they are.
So now he probably couldn't do, because I saw one of his shows was called The Man Show. He probably couldn't do that now. It'd have to be The People Show.
Well, you know, he did it with old Kimmel. They were like pals on there.
I never watched it.
And Kimmel, you know, he's such a left winger. But I did see somebody asked him if they're still friends. He said, yeah, we're friends. I mean, you know, Kimmel's kind of gone the anti, you know, the other way. But he said, yeah, we're friends.
But Al Kimmel had us on there. He was a perfect gentleman to us.
Well, in fact, he had y'all on and somebody else protested and didn't come on. Remember the guy? The vegan guy.
You know what was funny about that, doing that Jimmy Kimmel show? I thought, when you watch these late night shows, this might be interesting for our viewers. It may not, but I thought it was interesting. I thought we were going to get together and say, here's what we're going to do. You know, I'll ask you this and that. No. I was around. We were standing around telling jokes. He was telling jokes in the green room. There was like a little siren that went off, and guys said, hey, get to this spot. We got in line. I don't know if you remember this. Then they had a little elevator that like brought us up to the floor. You remember this, Phil?
Yeah.
And we walked out, the crowd, I thought, oh, this is it? I mean, we sat out. I was like, what is he fixing to say? I had zero idea of what the heck was going on.
And they had shown the little carrot clip thing y'all did with it.
We did do that, which seemed silly to me. And then when I went when it aired, because we saw that.
The audience can still pull it up on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
We were actually making so they didn't offend, which this is our culture. Since we didn't offend the meat lovers, we made vegetable calls. Carrot calls.
It's pretty funny. I thought it was clever.
And the guy that didn't come on, he didn't come on because we eat meat.
Yeah.
We hunt.
Morris.
It's tough for food laws to hang in there, but they still hold on to them.
Yeah, like me. Look, if you want to eat, you know, bitter roots and beet.
Tofu.
Great. I love you for that.
That's right. That says more meat for the rest of us.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.